Okay, so welcome. This is a consultative committee. Oh gosh, is this our fourth one virtual? It feels like it's a long time since we've been in the room together. I know we did have a tour and that was great to see people last year for that. I'm hopeful that we can maybe look at bringing ourselves back together for meetings, but at this point I think staying virtual is probably the best way to go for now, but maybe that's something we can talk about at the end in terms of what everyone's thoughts are on that. We need to do a roll call, so if I can just turn that over to you, Ingrid, if you can do a roll call of voting and non-voting members, please.
Sure. Now this is just going to be alphabetical order. So on the phone we have Avery Campbell, I believe, the 613 number. Eileen Lucy from Toronto Region Board of Trade, Alessandra from MTO, Brad Butt from Mississauga Board of Trade, Cheryl Peters from the City of Mississauga, Ludovic from Transport Canada, and Chris Fonseca, Councillor Fonseca has just joined, Daryl Shipp, Daryl Van Morsel, Dave Parko, John Davidson, Matt McNama, Sabir Syed, Shane Raymond, Atul Sharma, he's one of our speakers, and Stephen Tufts. And we also have Mr. Ivan Batty. He's a resident of Durham Region as a guest. I think I got everybody.
Great. Thank you very much. And just to formally introduce Avery to the group, Heather Craig-Petey, who's been a member of this committee for many years now, has retired. And so Avery, who is Advocacy and Industry Resources for ACTA, is joining our committee. So Avery, welcome. Very pleased that you're able to join us today and hope that you get some value out of these meetings. And we're looking forward to hearing about how things are going at ACTA. We know it's been a challenging time in the travel agency world. I think
Thank you for the warm welcome.
You're very welcome. And I do think we have a couple of alternates here today. I know Harold Drummond is not able to join us. So Cheryl Peters is here for Economic Development in the City. Did you say Cheryl is on the line?
Yes, I am.
You are. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you.
So our agenda was circulated a number of days ago for today's meeting. So unless if there's one change we're going to make, and I'm sorry, Eileen, we didn't have the name of your presentation for today when we pushed it out. So we will be just amending the agenda and your presentation is aptly titled Delivering What Matters During a Global Pandemic for UPS. Eileen is the Toronto Regional Board's representative on the committee, but she also is an employee at UPS. So we'd be really interested to hear how you guys are doing during the pandemic. So with that amendment, if I could ask for a motion to approve today's agenda. So Jonathan's firsting, and if I have a second, hand up Sabir. Thanks very much. Any opposed to today's agenda? Okay, I think we can consider that carried. The minutes from our last meeting were circulated. They were from June the 8th. Any omissions or changes or edits to the minutes from June the 8th? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands. So if I can have a motion to approve our June 8th minutes. Somebody who was at the meeting. Jonathan, thank you again. And if I can have a seconder. Apologies for the formalities. And Daryl, thanks so much for a second. And any objections to the minutes from June 8th? Seeing none, that is approved. We did have one item arising from our minutes from June the 8th, and Jonathan, you had provided us a link to the Building Supply Chain Resiliency Report, and so that was emailed to committee members on June the 15th. So I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. And with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Michael Mandel for our consultative committee update.
Yeah, really quickly, thanks, Lori. I won't go through it article by article because our presentation today, the GTA's presentation, is going to cover the measured easing of government travel restrictions, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen by now. It's going to cover Toronto Pearson's COVID impacts and our healthy airport updates, as well as our asks of government. But in the newsletter, there was a good news story about Afghan refugees arriving at Pearson. I know I'm certainly looking for good news stories these days, so that's one I'd encourage you to take a look at. We've launched what we're calling the Shops at Toronto Pearson. It's an e-commerce platform that takes a lot of the airport's retail offerings online. So that's worth looking at. And finally, I know we're all paying attention to the public conversation about vaccines that's happening right now. So the GTA supports a requirement for vaccinations in the workplace. And today we released our policy for employees, and we're encouraging all businesses operating at Toronto Pearson to do the same. So our policy essentially will have all GTA employees who aren't exempt need to be fully vaccinated by October 31st, 2021. And so we'll leave it there.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Any questions for Michael or the update? As you all know, those updates are circulated at the time we send out the minutes and the agenda. So, Stephen, question.
Thank you, Michael. Just on that point, this is an issue that's, of course, quite broadly discussed in the labor movement. The mandates of full vaccination for employees. I'm just wondering if this is the case where you were in discussion with unions as you developed this policy.
Absolutely. I mean, we reached out to union leadership at the airport as well as to employees to consult with them in advance of putting the policy together. So what you see today is after that consultation took place. One of the other things we're doing is we'll be rolling out education sessions for employees. We have a medical officer of health, okay. Dr. Eddie Wasser. And so starting next week for our employees, there's sessions that are available for them to go and participate and learn more about vaccinations and ask questions, do so in an anonymous way if that's their preference. And so trying to make sure people have the information that they need to make their choice. And as an employee, we're asked to attest to the fact that we've been vaccinated or our intention to be vaccinated over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Okay, that's great. Thanks. And of course, I knew that. I just want to make sure the committee knew it. And second question is a follow-up. What do you have any data yet to measure vaccine hesitancy among GTAA workers, the ones that this mandate would fall in that jurisdiction? Versus vaccine hesitancy among Pearson workers as a whole? And is there any further considerations legislatively or through GTAA policy to mandate full vaccination for workers as a condition of holding a rake?
Yeah, that's a great question, Stephen. So the first one around hesitancy, we haven't done a survey of our employees.
Okay.
So we don't know for sure. Our expectation is we probably don't look a lot different than general population. And I understand it's about 5 to 7% who, for their own reasons, will elect not to be vaccinated. And so we may see that same, whether it's across, equally across the airport or whether it's pockets in certain areas, we just don't know at this point.
Okay.
And then your second question was around legislation. So, I mean, this is a policy that we have rolled out for our own workforce. And so that's within our ability as the employer to set policies like these. We're still waiting to understand in terms of any legislative approach the government of Canada will proceed with. The announcement from the government was on August the 13th, covering federally regulated employees. And so it would be challenging for us, we believe, if this policy just applied to, GTA workers and not more broadly across the whole airport. Our employees work side by side with people from many workplaces. There's 400 companies that operate at the airport. Some operate in secure side, some operate in public side. And so an approach that covers across the airport, we think is a much simpler and also sort of founded in, you know, the health and safety reasons why vaccination, you know, is even being pursued is that if you believe it's about health and safety, then it, you know, I think it makes sense that it's applied across the whole workforce of anyone coming on site to keep people ultimately safe. What mechanism the feds may use or if that's even proceeded with post-election is yet to be determined. Mm-hmm. And whether or not the rake is used is still a discussion that, you know, on the face of it, sounds like an easy approach. Every GTA employee has a rake. Not all other people who work at the airport are required to have rakes just on the basis of the work that they do. Mm-hmm. Not an easy thing to do. It wouldn't be a quick and easy thing to do. So that might take some time. I think the attestation process is what we're proceeding with at this point is that, you know, as an employee, you attest to the fact that you're vaccinated. And so that's one way of approaching it from, other workplaces as well and partners and tenants and the like is to attest that your workforce is vaccinated and use that process and the quality assurance check of, you know, to track it.
Okay. Thank you very much. My one first, and I know we have a lot of things to cover today, but this is actually, it's actually quite important for workers at Pearson to understand the policy and its implications. And the last question, of course, is what is the GTAA remedy for or disciplinary action to be taken if an employee is not vaccinated, who's non-exempt for by October 31st? Is it dismissal or is it unpaid leave?
The policy as it's written indicates that employees who are not vaccinated need to apply for accommodation and only under grounds under the Human Rights Code would be considered exempt. And on a case-by-case basis, those applications for accommodation will be vetted. And consequences could be unpaid leave up to and including termination.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, let me just get back. Okay, so the first item on the agenda is an update of where we're at with Toronto Pearson, how we've been impacted by the pandemic. It's sort of a conversation we've had over the course of the past 18 or so months. I'm sure been hearing and seeing stories in the media that travel is starting to resume, which is great and positive news. We wanted to walk through and share with you how that recovery is happening, what the financial impacts continue to be on the airport, and some of the issues that we're speaking to government about. So Michael and his colleague Atul Sharma are going to walk through a presentation. And Michael or Atul or Ingrid, I'm hoping one of you is going to throw the deck up on the screen.
There you go. Ingrid's on it.
Awesome. Thanks, Ingrid. Over to you guys.
All right. Can everyone see that okay? There you go. It's a bit bigger. Is that the best mode, do you think, Ingrid, to scroll through slides, or are you going to go to presentation mode? Whatever's easier for you.
Sorry, give me a second.
Sure.
Not cooperating. So let me do...
We're all looking at your granddaughters, Ingrid.
Well, they are beautiful, aren't they?
They are. That's much better. Thanks, Ingrid.
Perfect.
Okay.
Just building on what Lori said, I think we're all eager to get back to a time pre-pandemic, if we can remember what that looked like. No more so than those in the aviation sector, I suspect. So if I can take you back in a virtual time machine to, you know, pre-pandemic times, Toronto Pearson was a 50 million passenger airport with 50,000 employees and the anchor of the airport employment zone, the second largest employment zone in Canada with 300,000 employees. And you can see on this slide, the economic spinoff was significant in terms of foreign direct investment, GDP contribution, and really the airport's contribution to travel, tourism, and economic development. You can go to the next slide. I know I've said this before to this group, but I think it's worth repeating. The impacts of COVID-19 on the aviation sector have been devastating and dramatic. GTA is a private not-for-profit, non-share capital corporation. The GTA's revenues are almost exclusively tied to the passengers. So through the first half of 2021, passenger traffic was down nearly 80% when compared to the same period in 2020. And as you might expect, with passenger traffic being so closely tied to our revenues, through the last six quarters, the GTA has had a net income loss of $746 million. And to put that into perspective, we've added roughly 15% to our pre-pandemic debt. So we're essentially operating on debt, borrowing money to keep the lights on, so to speak. And I think the lineups, what I'm seeing, and I'm sure what some of you are seeing, is you often see pictures of lineups and frankly, some delays at the airport. And that can be visually misleading, right? The airport looks like it's busy. But even with the government travel restrictions starting to ease in a measured way in August and September, we're still sitting at roughly 30% of what passenger traffic levels were at this time in 2019. Next slide, please. So drilling down a bit on 2020 impacts, I won't clear this entire slide, but I think it's worth mentioning that in response to the pandemic and related financial challenges, the GTA reduced our capital and operating budgets quite significantly, consolidated terminal operations wherever possible, went through a major restructuring and workforce reduction of roughly 30%. We sought and had exemptions to our debt covenants approved in 2020 and 2021. And we've taken advantage of any federal relief on offer in the form of the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy and a partial waiver of the airport's 2020 ground rent. Just to give you some added context there, any relief is welcome. The ground rent waiver accounted for roughly 17% of our net income losses that year, so in 2020. So just to give you a sense of further context of how that relief added up at the end of the day. The next slide, please. You can see here how things are playing out in 2021 in terms of passenger activity and revenue losses. Over $770 million in new COVID-driven debt since 2019, and the interest burden that obviously comes along with that debt accumulation. In 2021, we did increase our aeronautics rates for the first time in 13 years, and AIF for the first time in 11 years. We increased the aeronautic rates by 3%, but the impacts of these rates increases is muted as activity at the airport is low at the moment. So when you look at the accumulation of debt, if I could leave you with one point here, it's that the accumulation of debt will severely impact Toronto Pearson's timeline for recovery, our ability to compete with U.S. and international airports that have received, in some cases, billions of dollars in direct government assistance, and our ability to hire back unemployed and furloughed workers and invest in critical infrastructure. Can we move to the next slide, please? In June 2020, obviously, you know by now, the GTA launched, and many of you seen firsthand when you toured the airport. We launched our Healthy Airport Commitment in June 2020, which lays out guiding principles based on global best practices to ensure Toronto Pearson is a healthy place to work and travel through. We've accelerated low-touch, no-touch innovation, autonomous floor cleaners, UV light for disinfection, optimized air filtration, which is really key. And something we continue to work on. We've worked closely with industrial hygienists And Lori mentioned the GTA's chief medical officer, Dr. Edward Wasser, to make sure our healthy airport experience is based on the latest science and evidence. And I'm proud to say Toronto Pearson has been awarded the best hygiene measures in North America by Airport Council International. Next slide, please. We're always trying to better understand Toronto Pearson's passengers and their travel expectations. From a survey we conduct in 2021, we know that passengers are confident in Toronto Pearson's health and hygiene practices, and there's a strong awareness of our healthy airport measures and practices, but that travel remains confusing. And travel and confusing are two words we never want to hear in the same sentence, so we stepped up with a campaign to help travelers make informed decisions about every step of their travel journey. And with that, I'll hand it over to my colleague Atul. He's also a manager of government affairs and stakeholder relations in the public affairs group here, and he'll walk you through the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Michael. So just picking up where Michael was, is the importance of ensuring that there's confidence in travel. I mean, we've seen in Canada that vaccination rates are very high, one of the highest in the world, and we're still seeing slow increases in travel. So we continue to push to ensure that passengers have confidence in the measures that we're taking, and we've done several things to make that happen. I'm just going to talk about a couple of those. So one of them is this When You're Ready to Travel campaign that we've put together. So as Michael alluded to, that there is a lot of confusion out there as to what some of the travel restrictions are, what are the requirements, whether you're coming into Canada or going to another country. If people are making plans for down the road, say a couple of months, they'll want to know sort of what is happening in that country that they're going to. So we are providing information to passengers who are coming into Canada and ensuring that they know that, you know, what is the process if they're a fully vaccinated passenger and if they're not vaccinated. And as you've seen and as you know, that vaccinated passengers are welcome from all countries at this point. And they are not required to do an arrivals test, but they are subject to a randomized test. So they could be selected for an arrivals test, whereas non-vaccinated passengers, so both groups have to do a pre-departure test as well, but non-vaccinated passengers are required 100% to do an arrivals test, and on day 8 to do their second test as well. And both groups also have to submit their information through ArriveCan as well. So we're working with CVSA and FAC and the airlines and other testing partners to ensure that there is a process in place to try to make it as easy as possible for passengers, and working together to mitigate the factors that could cause delays. We've also put together a new website and a portal, enhanced signage and communication efforts, and we've been fairly strong on social, and you may have seen some of those posts updating passengers on what to expect when they arrive at Toronto Pearson. Next slide, please. So another part of ensuring that there's confidence, of course, is the screening and testing process, and we've been very active on that front. You may recall back in the fall of 2020, we worked with McMaster Health Labs to produce a study which was quoted all around the world in terms of positivity rates. And then again, as the government moved into pre-departure testing, we supported that process as well. And as also with arrivals testing, we've stood that up and worked with partners to be very quick and nimble to ensure that the environment at Toronto Pearson, both for passengers and for airport workers, continued to be safe. Continuing to build upon that, we worked with the National Research Council to study how you can put testing within an airport environment and show that how it can become an effective and sustainable service, and how that can be operationalized within the airport. So that study ended on July 9th, and then we quickly moved on July 12th into a partnership with Switch Health, where we began to offer affordable services to employees, to the community, and to passengers. So you can, if you have not done so, you can come to the airport and meet your requirement for a pre-departure test, which you can receive on airport property as well. You have different options through a PCR or an antigen, depending upon the requirement of the country that you're going to as well. And it's located in our value parking garage, and you can also drive through. There's a drive-through testing option as well. So we're continuing to focus on innovation and continuing to do better. We are looking at a partnership with Creative Destruction Labs on how to set up a voluntary airport-wide employee screening program, which can be done at home, which allows for self-screening and self-reporting also. Next slide, please. So I think we've already covered through this in the earlier discussion. We are talking to the government about things that we would like to see is clarity in the rules, understanding of who is responsible for what, consistency of application across airports, how do individual companies who are at airports, how do they confirm or attest that their employees have been vaccinated as well? So, and you know that this has been part of the discussion in the federal election. So we'll wait to see the results on Monday, and then expect to see some direction from the government coming from that. Some of the things that we've been talking to the government about as well with respect to priorities. Back in 2020, at the end of March, the government provided a waiver on our ground rent, which we very much appreciated. But in 2021 budget, we saw that was changed into a deferral, which requires us to pay back the rent or to pay the rent for 2021, but beginning in 2024 and over a period of 10 years. So we've gone back to the government, the federal government, to ask them to reconsider the 2021 decision, and as they look forward to 2022, to ensure that they look at a waiver as an option, given our continuing weakness in our finances, which Michael talked about going forward. And if they, you know, that would really be more of a benefit to us rather than just the deferral, as we continue to owe that money to the federal government. We're also looking for the government to ensure that there's adequate resourcing for CBSA as the numbers will continue to grow over time, we hope, and as well as appropriate number of officers for U.S. Customs Border Protection as well. As we've seen, there's our transporter traffic is also continuing to increase, and we want to make sure that while the number of officers has decreased as a result of the decrease in passenger traffic, that comes back in a commensurate level as well. Digital credentials is an area where we've pushed the government on as well. And you saw an announcement just prior to the election that the government is working with the provinces on creation of a digital credential for international travel. So we're very much supportive of that. The government has made some announcements with respect to infrastructure investment programs. And we've made some applications, which I'll talk about in the next slide. But we feel that there's more to be done there, and that if we are to become competitive with international airports, we need to ensure that there's a longer term investment process or program in play. We actually made a proposal to that effect to the government as well, that if they look at the ground rent over a 10-year period, which is approximately, you know, about $150 million per year in normal times, that could be redirected towards infrastructure investment in Toronto Pearson. And over a course of 10 years, that would be about $1 billion, and that would have major economic benefits through job creation and economic spinoffs as well. We've also talked to the government about different revenue opportunities. As Michael mentioned, that, you know, our model continues to be focused on passengers, and some of these opportunities will help us take advantage of the return of passengers through programs like Arrivals Duty Free, which essentially allow you to purchase duty free products upon arrival into Canada rather than only being able to purchase upon departure. And next one, please. So these are the applications that we've made or are looking to make through the critical infrastructure program. One is on technology transformation. There is one thing that we've seen is an acceleration of the requirements for the use of technology in passenger processing and the desire to see much more sort of low touch or no touch operations at the airport as well. And so this would apply for both check-in and return for border processing, as well as improvements for accessibility as well. We do have a baggage facility, which is operating beyond capacity at this point, and a project that was in play prior to the onset of the pandemic and one that had to be stopped. And so we'd like to finish that project off to ensure that there's efficient capacity there. We do have a major program for airside pavement restoration over several years, and the government has indicated that that is a type of project that they are looking for. So we have put an application in for that. The critical infrastructure program will fund up to 50% of your project. So what you see here is the 50% value, up to a maximum of $100 million. So this project is over the number of years is about $214 million. We are also looking to the federal government to help us continue the momentum on the airport segment for Eglinton Crosstown, and want to see that proceed rather than have it delayed at a time when it becomes much more difficult to get back to that. I see a question from Sabir. I'm happy to stop and take a question. You're just on mute.
Atul, thank you very much. I think this is excellent. I just had a quick question, and I know I was going to ask that question to Michael as well, that Pearson International Airport is doing an excellent work. GTA is doing an excellent work. My question is that we are putting all our eggs in one basket, that is passenger. You're depending too much on passenger revenues. And this is an excellent opportunity. And I want to make this case to Laurie as well that you have to invest money on the goods movement side. And Pearson International Airport has a niche area that you can work with lighter goods that could be transferred quickly from point A to point B. And these are some of the goods that are needed in hospitals, and these are the goods that are needed in factories, which are lighter and which are time sensitive. I'm hoping that you can utilize that opportunity, and even you can open a third runway just for the cargo, because you need to balance your revenue from passengers and cargo. And when I see, Michael, your earlier slide on the debt, you have an excellent opportunity. You are in a bigger market in GTA and Hamilton area. Why not you are not spending money on the cargo side? That's my biggest question, and I'm still concerned that we need to have one or two applications that are related to cargo.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Sabir. And in talking to folks from our, across the business, but definitely our commercial team, they would definitely agree with you in terms of revenue diversification and the importance of diversifying our revenues. I know I have been engaged with that group, our commercial department, in meetings with economic development departments across the region. So Brampton, Mississauga, City of Toronto, we've reached out to the province to understand what their economic development plans are for the airport area, how we can partner with companies in the area when we think about development in the airport employment zone. And the Pearson, the area around Pearson is designated a provincially significant employment zone. So what does that look like longer term? What are the partnerships that we can have in businesses in that area to make sure, their highest and best use for the land around the airport? And it's in areas that you would think about, right? When you think about innovation, 5G, green technologies, and goods movement, absolutely, logistics and manufacturing and smart logistics. I know that's an area you're tapped into, Sabir. So absolutely, I'd welcome the discussion offline if you want to take this offline, and I can make sure I connect you with the right people and we can have those conversations.
Thank you, Michael. But is there an opportunity to add one or two applications here related to cargo? Maybe you don't have to answer it right now, but just think about that, please.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I mean, we are open to new and innovative ideas. There is, as you know, Sabir, I think you and I spoke about the National Trade Corridor Fund as well. I mean, depending upon sort of what the project is, that's certainly something under consideration. And as Michael had mentioned, you know, I'm certainly happy to have that, continue that conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
Ludwig.
Hi, yes, I was about to reference the National Trade Corridor Fund. That's a $1.9 billion recapitalization over the next 11 years. I think that is a significant pot of money to which the GTAA should definitely consider submitting applications, especially as Sabir has pointed out in the goods movement area. I think the focus there is on trade corridors, and goods certainly do travel through Pearson, albeit in significantly reduced manner right now, but enough to know that there is certainly a welcome for that kind of an application. Hamilton Airport, by way of example, improved their runways and a taxiway based on the fact that they would be advancing in the small cargo business, the parcel post stuff. So DHL has expanded their facility there. Cargojet's expanded their facility there because the runway improvements that have been done there, $7.5 million was our investment, which doubled up to $15 million, was significant enough for them to now actually have greater increase in cargo traffic touchdown at Hamilton. I think Pearson stands to gain the same way. My two cents.
Thank you. No, that's very helpful. And, yeah, we're certainly taking a look at National Trade Corridor as an option and looking at opportunities internally that we could take forward. The last point I was just going to make was on biosecurity, which is to a fund for testing. We are looking at putting an application in there with respect to infrastructure around testing, which is like software development, walls, seating, furniture. So there is an application going in for that as well. And I think that's the end of my portion. If there's any other questions, certainly Michael and I would be happy to entertain those.
Great. Thanks so much, Atul and Michael. Any further questions for Michael or Atul? All right, thanks.
That's great. Thank you.
So we do have a presentation from Eileen Lucy. As I said, Eileen is here as the representative from the Toronto Region Board of Trade, but paycheck comes from UPS. So do you have a presentation you're putting up, or does Ingrid have that? Oh, and there it is.
Eileen's doing it.
Eileen, okay, over to you, Eileen. Thanks so much for presenting today. Oh, you're on mute.
There we go.
Perfect.
Thank you. Is my presentation the right size? Can you all see it
clearly? Yeah, it looks perfect to me.
Okay, fantastic. Great. Well, thank you so much for including me on the agenda this afternoon. It's been a couple of years now that I've been part of this committee on behalf of the Toronto Region Board of Trade, but I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to present to the group. So very happy to do so, particularly after what has been an incomparable year or two here at UPS. I've been with the organization for 8 years in total, including about half of that time over in Europe and Brussels, and the rest of it here in Canada. And so this afternoon, I will be giving a short overview of specifically UPS's experience during the pandemic in Canada. I've tried to weave in a couple of more specific references to air cargo, as I know that might be more of interest to this group. I mean, we do, of course, move goods all sorts of ways at UPS, so I'll be speaking a little bit to each dimension of the business for the next 15 minutes or so. So for those of you who might be a bit less familiar with UPS, just to share that Our organization has a rather rich history. We started out as a bicycle messenger company back in 1907 in the United States. So we did start as a small business. The image on the right is a picture of our very first package car. It was, I believe, a Model T Ford. But the picture on the left is from 1907. And those are our very initial messengers. We've grown a little since then. We now have over 500,000 employees worldwide. We operate in over 220 countries and territories. We deliver to every address in North America. Our global delivery fleet is of 127,000 packaged cars, and 15,000 of which run on alternative fuel. That's something that we're quite proud of, but also a number that we're working quite aggressively to try to increase. And Canada was the very first country that UPS expanded to internationally back in 1975. So Canada specifically has a special place in our hearts as a global organization. The official number of employees is 12,000, but I have been checking our census figures over the last couple of months, and we are over 14,000 at the moment. And that is due to the overwhelming demand for our services that we have seen in Canada and worldwide during the pandemic. I'll speak to that a little bit later on. And we operate across 62 facilities here in Canada too. UPS is maybe better known to many of you for our brown package cars that conduct that final mile delivery, so maybe sometimes to your homes or your places of work. But we are also a global airline. UPSCO is our airline, headquartered in Louisville, Kentucky. We have several Canadian gateway operations as well. Here in Ontario, our main gateway operation is at Hamilton Airport, although we do sometimes have browntail operations, I believe, at Pearson. We also operate from Pearson through our Supply Chain Solutions Global Freight Forwarding business. That's when UPS works with third-party airlines, purchasing and selling aircraft space, sometimes even in the belly hold of commercial passenger aircraft too. So during the pandemic, so I run government relations for UPS here in Canada, and my work during the pandemic has been dominated by what we refer to as operational continuity. So working on anything and everything that is required to enable our employees to continue working safely and for our operations to continue functioning, to be able to provide service to our customers. That has required interaction at the federal, provincial, regional and municipal levels over the last year or so. The very first thing that we had to prioritize as an organization in Canada was in the early stages of the pandemic, where particularly provincial authorities were developing essential service lists and requiring the closure of certain non-essential businesses. The fact that we didn't have a uniform Canadian list and that different provinces were working along different timelines meant that from a UPS perspective, we had to engage certainly with officials to make sure that there was an understanding of the broad spectrum of different types of operations that are required to keep our business running. So a package center might be a more obvious one, but perhaps a customs brokerage operation might be a little less obvious. So we have warehouses, some of those are temperature controlled for the healthcare part of our business that deals with pharmaceuticals or other temperature sensitive goods. And so ensuring that we could maintain some sort of operational continuity through that essential service recognition was very important. The second piece that came along a little bit later, more recently, in fact, was the Section 22 orders that were invoked, particularly by a number of regional health authorities here in Ontario, that suddenly meant that depending on the number of cases of COVID that might be contracted by employees in a particular facility, that facility could face partial or sometimes full closure. So at UPS, we actually didn't have any closures. That was in large part thanks to the hard work of our health and safety team, working closely with the regional public health authorities to make sure that we were doing everything we could to maintain a safe workplace and also deal appropriately whenever cases did arise amongst the workforce. The second part of operational continuity in the UPS world is cross-border. And this obviously involved working closely with federal government officials for UPS's cross-border ground operations. Our feeder vehicles that you see pictured on the left there, they cross the Canada-US border several dozen times per day. And within our network, and this might be a little unique to UPS, all of our drivers who cross that US-Canada border are actually Canadian drivers who drive southbound. They drive southbound a little bit and then meet up and exchange trailers with a US counterpart and then return to Canada and will sometimes conduct that journey several times a day. So as you can imagine, making sure that those individuals were able to clear through customs and not be subject to whether it's quarantine requirements or, you know, arduous testing requirements that would have any kind of major operational impact was something that we also worked on. For our air operations, that is slightly different. We have UPS pilots and crew who are maybe operating UPS aircraft into Canada. But we also, and this was something I only learned during the pandemic, is that in order to effectively deploy our pilots as a workforce, sometimes pilots themselves will actually commute to different cities. They might commute from the US, from their home base in the United States, to a particular Canadian city via commercial aircraft as a passenger in order to pilot a UPS aircraft back out of Canada southbound to the US. So not only did we require provisions and accommodations for pilots who were on duty at the time of crossing the border, but we also needed to speak with officials about the fact that we've got pilots who are shortly becoming, will shortly be on duty and are traveling for those purposes. I will move on to the next slide here. Another aspect was on, so increasing our operational capacity. UPS has a major facility that we've just finished constructing in Caledon, Ontario. This is now our biggest facility in all of Canada. Construction was underway before the pandemic hit, but as some of you might recall, construction itself was subject to lockdown orders. And so something that we worked on at the provincial level in Ontario was seeing if there might be some flexibilities to enable the resumption of safe construction activity in order to facilitate the provision of more capacity in an industry that just desperately needed more capacity as soon as possible. So that was something that this Caledon building is now online and has made a huge difference to our ability to serve our customers here in Canada. Our health and safety protocol, as with, I would imagine, most, if not all employers, also evolved for sure. So we've changed our operating protocols to ensure that there is appropriate screening of employees before they arrive, social distancing and the use of PPE. We've also made some changes to some parts of our buildings to deter group gatherings. We closed temporarily our customer service counters to reduce the number of members of the public who would be approaching UPS facilities and spending time in there. And we've also been communicating with our workforce. We have not at this time introduced a mandatory vaccination policy, but what we have been doing is communicating very actively with our employees, encouraging them to become educated and giving them information on where they can access the vaccine and healthcare services. We did conduct a couple of straw polls of our own, and similar to, I think, the GTAA, we have no reason to believe that our workforce are, you know, that different to the general Canadian population when it comes to vaccine uptake / hesitancy. To just say a few words on air freight dynamics. So this information comes from our global freight forwarding business. So this is the part of UPS that buys and sells capacity on aircraft, shipping containers for the movement of palletized goods. As you'll see here, there was a dip in demand for air freight, but there was an even greater dip in air freight capacity. which is what's driven prices and driven the market from our own perspective. The loss in capacity, I think I heard earlier, was at 80%, an 80% dip in passenger movement. So our organization also relies on the what we call like the belly holds of passenger aircraft. So when those aircraft were no longer moving, that certainly had a significant impact on the capacity available for the movement of goods too. So we certainly saw that from our perspective. The current expectation is that while we've seen partial recovery now, we're still not quite there at the 100 mark, which would be bringing it back to a normal capacity levels. There is an anticipation that we'll be creeping back to full capacity by 2022. And then just to close, I think that one of the more surprising aspects, I think, about the pandemic for an organization like ours is that, you know, we move everything. We move everything from documents to, you know, large pieces of machinery to healthcare products. And healthcare has always been rather special. We refer to it as it's a patient, not a package. They're packages that need to be handled differently. But I don't think that any of us at UPS could have quite anticipated what it would feel like to be the organization that brought the very first deliveries of the COVID-19 vaccine into Canada back in December 2020. I had the privilege of actually being on the runway to greet the aircraft. This is not an image of the actual aircraft because the real one arrived at night. This is a later delivery of vaccines, but the original arrived late one night on a Sunday night in December 2020. And UPS has continued since then to deliver all supplies of specifically the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. All of those vaccines are moving in the UPS network. We've been bringing them from Europe and from the US into Canada, bringing them in through on our UPS Browntail aircraft, as you see there, and conducting final mile delivery to the points of use as well. That was a unique operation and required collaboration with everybody from the Prime Minister's office, Minister Anand's office, to CBSA. Certainly the CBSA were fantastic and developed a specific protocol for the movement of vaccines to ensure effective and seamless clearance of those specific deliveries. And then also the RCMP and the OPP in Ontario and with other security agencies in different areas to make sure that we could make all of those deliveries go without any hiccups, which they did not, thankfully. Here's an image of Minister Algabra with our pilots in one of our Browntails during a recent visit. And so that's something that we've been incredibly proud to be part of that solution for Canadians. Another aspect of what we do, and this is on the freight forwarding side of our business. Earlier this year, UPS worked together with the Government of Ontario to move 3,000 ventilators, which were donated by the Government of Ontario, to India during a time of dire need. That was a major undertaking that involved the UPS Foundation, which is our humanitarian relief arm, as well as UPS Canada and our global freight forwarding operation. So again, two examples of the types of goods that can be moving in our network and what makes it so important that an organization like ours is able to maintain that operational continuity, you know, keep our employees safe and continue to be able to deliver the goods that Canadians so desperately need. And with that, I will close and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Eileen, thank you so much. I mean, it's hard to even think about, you know, what you might have been working on in sort of a normal 2020 and 2021 because all of the ways we've all had to change and God, the word of the pandemic is pivot. But a great presentation. So thank you. I'll open up the floor to any questions. Right. Well, we'll make sure a copy of your presentation is circulated to everybody so they have a chance to see it themselves. And thanks again for sharing it. Oh, Stephen Tuff.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
I think there is one question.
No, it's all right.
Sure. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, how are you? And thank you very much. That was a very interesting and comprehensive presentation. I'm just talking a little bit about the recovery. And of course, I follow UPS and its agreements with the Teamsters. You just ratified a 5-year agreement with the Teamsters last year going forward. Some interesting clauses in that agreement. Congratulate UPS on allowing drivers to have beards, for example, for the first time in that agreement. So I thank you for that. That was a good modernization effort. But there is also going into the U.S. and spreading into Canada, we talk about labor shortages in some sectors. And the cargo sector is one of those sectors that's looked at a labor shortage issue. And in the U.S., the UPS, in some cases, it's argued as being priced out or being competed because Amazon is paying more to drivers and to workers. And I'm wondering if what the case is for during this recovery, as freight recovers and capacity recovers and shipments increase, what UPS's strategy is for competing with Amazon and other cargo companies going forward, and if that's going to create any long-term implications for the sector as a whole when things recover and people start hiring again in even larger numbers. But thanks for the great presentation. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Stephen. That's a very accurate observation and a great question. Just a quick note on the beards. That was a global UPS policy change. So very exciting for the whole organization that we had very strict appearance guidelines, corporate appearance guidelines that date back to those images from 1907, where we just had very strict images, ideas of presentation, personal presentation, but we've modernized and made those rules more inclusive, which I personally am also very happy about, and most UPSs are thrilled about that. In terms of labor shortages in the US, that's certainly something that our US colleagues are living each and every day. Here in Canada, we're also seeing changes and new constraints to the labor market. I think that there are a number of factors that are contributing to that. There are a lot of us in the same space now competing for workers in similar types of industries. UPS is proud to be one of those organizations who are unionized and who offer unionized jobs rather than other types of maybe slightly more precarious working conditions. That is not a road that we travel down as an organization. So I think that we focus on that as one of the selling points, certainly of working at UPS. But I think that our industry is changing. It's changing dramatically. So is customer behavior and consumer expectations when it comes to delivery services. So we're being kept on our toes for sure. I think that we're constantly having to think of new ways to find smart ways to continue to deliver and meet expectations while maintaining realistic working conditions and appropriate working conditions for our people. So not really something, Stephen, that I think I have the answer to. It's something we pontificate about a lot, and I read around it in the industry and what's going on. So would love to continue the conversation. But yeah, it's certainly top of mind for our company.
Thank you very much. All right, so we're going to move on to our next piece in the agenda, which is our go around and member update. So as always, this is a chance for you to share with us priority issues that you and your organization are dealing with, items that you'd like to bring forward. If there are any items that you would like us to have on a future agenda, please do signal that as well. We are always interested to hear from members of the committee, and sharing information is such a big part of what we do in our hour and a half, 2 hours together. So with that, I'm going to just look at my bubbles, excuse me, as I go to my list. And probably the easiest way is I'll just start at the top. And Eileen, you are actually still on my screen and at the top of my list with an A. So Is there anything else? I know you've just been through a pretty comprehensive presentation. Is there anything else you wanted to bring to the attention of the group, perhaps from the Board of Trade's perspective or
prayers? I do. And please forgive me for reading from a note that the team at Toronto Board of Trade have sent over to me, but just a couple of updates that would be relevant for this group. So tomorrow morning, the Toronto Board of Trade will be having their annual policy priority setting session. That will be a three-hour session to hopefully give some more direction as to what some of the focus areas will be for the board over the next couple of months. Another update that they wanted to share was that the board and the Smart Prosperity Institute recently released a report called Priced Out, which is a joint report exploring housing affordability for manufacturing workers in Toronto and Peel region. The report uses data and case studies to highlight the struggles of manufacturing workers in the goods production and distribution district, which some of you might recall were previously highlighted in the business district report. The second thing that they wanted to just remind this group of is that they are currently planning for their transportation summit in early December. So hopefully some more information to come on when exactly that will take place and in what format. That's not information that I have at this time, but that's it from the Toronto Board of Trade.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Badar from Brampton Board of Trade, you're next. Hi, Badar. How are you?
Hi, everybody. I think that was a fantastic presentation, by the way. So at Brampton Board of Trade, we've had a fairly calm and quiet summer, for the lack of a better word. We have been consulting with our small businesses and engaging in advocacy on their behalf with different levels of the government, and also preparing more or less for the upcoming elections and different asks that our business community members have been outlining from different levels of the government has been basically prepared ahead of the elections. So at this point in time, the focus is on securing some funding for essential infrastructure. Highway 10 continues to stay a hot topic. In addition to Highway 413 in northern Brampton, there has been some controversy around that. From a chamber's perspective, we would like to see the governments proceed with the relevant studies and move on with the infrastructure development. Having said that, from the federal side, there has been some concerns from an environmental perspective, and that seems to be now delaying not just the potential development of the highway, but also the development of lands to the northwestern quarter of the city, which we call Heritage Heights. There's some planning disagreements between what the city would like to see in terms of a connection between future 413 highway going through Heritage Heights and then extensive or high density development taking place within that area as compared to what the province is promoting in terms of just the highway itself taking a turn through the area and then connecting with 400 West. So it doesn't look like we're going to see any resolution anytime soon on any of those issues. But for the time being, basically, the chamber is just keeping an eye on the elections. We just had the election debates, which the chamber facilitated with all party members outlining their policies. And yesterday, the chamber also met the city to provide input in the city's development plans over the next 30 years from both employment growth perspective as well as infrastructure growth perspective.
Excellent. I'm going to go to my voting members list. I want to make sure I don't skip over anybody. So next would be Sabir from the region of Peel.
Thank you, Laurie. At the region of Peel, we have been working on many projects that includes the sustainable transportation as well as goods movement. Currently, we are taking a report to our council, providing an update on the goods movement side. And as I mentioned to you last time, that we are very fortunate to have Region of Peel designated as United Nations Regional Center of Expertise. So we will be taking a report on the work plan to our regional council. And Laurie, I think if in future, if you want to put a proposal, we'll be very pleased to participate in a proposal. And especially we can focus on the air cargo so you can diversify your business as well. So we'll be very happy to participate on any joint proposal. And I think Ludovic made an excellent point that there are some examples from Hamilton Airport, so we can replicate here in Peel. Thank you.
You know, if there's money to be had, I mean, we're not going to say no to it. We have applied to National Trade Corridor funds in the past and was not successful. But you know what? I think applications for government funding are now in our middle name or something. So we'll keep pushing out those applications and see what sticks. So happy to work with you on that, Sabir, and learn from what others have done too.
Thank you.
When is that report going to council, Sabir?
October 28th.
Great, thank you. All right, I don't think Councillor Singh from Brampton was able to join us today. Okay, so John Davidson from Region of Halton. John, you're up.
Okay, hey, Laurie, thanks for that. Just a couple of things for me. On October 20th, we'll have the GTAA with actually we get them twice this year. I think they were in to speak to our council in January, so a biannual delegation, I think, which will cover some of the territory that Michael had presented earlier. So looking forward to that and an ongoing conversation with our council, which is always important. So that's happening this fall. Just picking up on a point that similar to where Bidar was on some of the highway planning, we have a lot of properties, commercial and industrial properties that are along the 401 highway, which have been frozen over the last number of years with provincial highway corridor planning. Some of those have now been taken out of active study. So we're hoping to unleash those, service those, and help drive some new economic development. But we do need the province to relinquish fully all of those controls that are still there to a certain degree. So hoping to get that turned, I think, over the next little while, which will help some further economic development in our region. And then finally, I guess just we have an active fall. It's going to be busy for sure. But one thing I think from a growth perspective is we'll be taking our preferred growth concept to our regional council in November with our population and employment growth concept out to 2051. So definitely has implications for employment, land development and goods movement, and making sure that all of those continue to function while our community also wants to move towards a more of a mixed use concept with a much more of a blurring between office and employment. All that underscored by everything we see from work from home and understanding what that means for our economy. So lots of things for us under consideration, and we'll probably be going out to the market with a study that's going to continue to look at some of these issues, including work from home, as well as the digital economy, as opposed to the goods moving economy, but looking at how our municipality can actually function within that changing set of circumstances. So that's basically us for now, I think, for the good of the committee. Thanks.
Great. Thanks very much, John. It does sound like a very busy fall for you. And as I mentioned, we do have Avery Campbell. Avery, this is your first meeting, and I know you're on your phone, so I hope you're still able to hear us. Avery is with ACTA, and he's replacing Heather Craig-Pitty, who's been on our committee for some time. So any issues you wanted to bring to our attention? And as I said, I know the pandemic's been very challenging for the travel agency business. Travel and tourism has been pretty hard hit. So items that you're focusing on that you want to share with the committee?
Thank you. Yes, the travel agencies and independent travel agents are just absolutely in a horrific position following the impacts of COVID-19 on revenue. We are not seeing substantial recovery in our sector at this time. No updates that are particularly relevant to GTAA. All we can say is any measures that support and enable traveler experiences through the Toronto Airport would benefit our sector. Increased access to COVID-19 testing, increased ease of use through the airport experience. Those types of things would benefit our members. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Stephen Tufts.
Thanks, everyone. I'll be very very quick. Just a couple of things. We're continuing a period of renewal for TAWC. We lost a few key members with buyouts during the pandemic, inspired by some buyouts of senior staff by Air Canada and a couple other companies. But we are engaging in a period of steward retraining, and there's actually a large meeting happening this fall in Port Elgin at the Unifor facility where we'll be meeting to discuss issues as we get into recovery. On the labor market side of the airport itself, a lot of it's anecdotal. We need to get a little bit more solid information, but we are seeing some labor shortage problems emerge as workers are recalled via on the basis of seniority or not. Our position is that the myth in the media that CERB and other related benefits, which are really slated to retire quite soon, are the reason why people aren't taking low-wage jobs is actually not always accurate, and that what underlying feature might actually be a broader sectoral shift where people who are in the airport or in hospitality, given the working conditions in some of those jobs and the instability overall even before COVID, may have just decided to leave and enter work in other sectors that are both employing people and perhaps employing people on a more permanent, regular basis going forward. So we're doing our best to deal with that, and we're keeping an eye on what the problems may be going forward if recovery does ramp up speed, but there's a few workers to take the jobs to get us to that 50,000 point that we were at pre-COVID. And of course, with the GTAA, this was a concern that was raised all back in the winter, spring of 2020. And we said this might be a possibility, and there looks like a possibility has emerged, and we'll see what happens. If employers can actually get bodies to do the work that the airports need in so many jobs. All right, thank you.
That's a good point, Stephen. As we look to recover, we need those employees to be there to help support the business. The Toronto Region Board of Trade's Aviation Workforce Recovery Playbook is something we've been participating on with the Toronto Airport Workers Council and other unions. I was checking in with the team this week, and I understand that there's, still work being done to understand what recommendations could be brought forward in sort of the short, medium, and longer term. What's your expectation in terms of that work? I mean, I'm hearing that they're hoping to have recommendations, this winter at some point.
Yeah, I think I did, one interview in that project. It was some time ago, and my memory isn't what it used to be. But I'll have to check in to see what the status is and how others have been participating in that project.
Yeah, and maybe it's something good we can put onto the agenda in terms of when they've got some recommendations, we can bring that forward, through the Toronto Region Board of Trade and the other partners, including the airport and TAWC, to share where it's going. Okay.
Thank you.
I don't think Councillor Rudd Board from the City of Toronto is not able to join us today. Brad Butt, Mississauga Board of Trade. Brad, you're up next. I did see Brad. I don't know if maybe he had to leave. Yeah, I'm not seeing him anymore. Okay, we'll move on. Jonathan Wheel from York Region.
Hello again, everyone. Good to see you, Laurie. So I've got a couple of updates, not a whole bunch. So one upcoming activity for us in September, of course, we are hosting the GTAA at our councils, just like John Davidson is out in Halton. In November, on November 3rd, the region will be the host of the Agriculture and Agri-Food Summit, which is focused on innovation and resiliency in the agri-food sector, especially in the face of COVID. So we're looking forward to that, and I'll share information on that to the group as well. We've also recently released an innovation ecosystem study, an RFQ for an innovation ecosystem study. So that's something that should be giving us more in-depth insight into the innovation ecosystem within York Region. As many of you know, the region is home to the highest concentration of technology companies in the country, second only to the city of Toronto in terms of absolute numbers. So we're really trying to learn a little bit more about how we got to where we are. So that's something we're looking forward to. And we're continuing to support the, from an economic development perspective, we're continuing to support the many shop local campaigns that are in place by the nine chambers and boards across the region, as well as some of the local municipalities, really trying to raise the profile of our small businesses and help them to, again, recover throughout this pandemic. So that's it from me.
Excellent. Thanks so much. We are looking forward to our updates to the regions this fall. Next on the list is, I think Councillor Fonseca is no longer with us either. I think she must have had to leave. So go to our City of Mississauga representative, Daryl Shipp.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. How are you doing? First of all, great presentations, very informative, and obviously it'd be nice to get back to the airport on a more consistent basis. I was there, I guess, last weekend. I flew to Halifax with my family for the weekend. Again, it's what you see on TV may be different than what you see in reality. It took us 5 minutes to get from the parking garage to the gate, which was nice. I'll do my first trip to the U.S. in 18 months this coming weekend, so I'll report back to see how that goes. But other than that, let's see where next week goes and where we're going with the new federal or existing federal leadership. But nothing else to report from my end.
Okay, thanks, Daryl. Shane, City of Toronto resident representative.
Well, don't have much substantial. I can share experiences that I've had at the airport in recent times. I was impressed with the handling of some things. One less than fortunate incident with physical distancing, it more or less wasn't in existence. And pretty much there were people not wearing masks. And I mentioned it to a person at security, and I kind of pointed out, like, what, you're not going to make people wear masks? And he wasn't trying to be cute with me. He pretty much said, we've kind of given up on a bunch of that. And I think, like, I realize that certain matters that exist in theory can't be entirely implemented. But to hear someone sincerely say, and for me to see pretty much saying, yep, we've given up, I don't know if that's really what the objective that the GTAA should be striving for. I do think a lot of people are working very hard. I saw that. I could tell that there were shortages of a lot of key labor. I think a lot of the airlines and people staffing are having trouble replacing the positions that were suspended or terminated at the beginning of this. So I do recognize a lot of struggles, and I did see a lot of people trying their best. And what I would urge as a member of the public is, I think we do have to be realistic, but we don't want to give up completely. Even when it's a challenge, giving up completely isn't the answer, and conveying a message that we've given up completely is not the answer. And as a member of this committee, if there's any way I am ever able to help or speak to others about it or try, I'd like to be part of that solution.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's good for us to hear. There is no question that it's been a long haul for workers at the airport who have been there day in and day out. And so, people are tired, and we've been asking a lot of folks to work long hours, and sometimes dealing with not always people are very happy if your flight's been delayed or whatever. But and you're right that it's not always practical for all of the measures to be in place. And you mentioned the physical distancing, for example. And that's not always possible and practical in our in the airport setting. That said, what comes with that is a requirement for mask wearing, requirement for higher standards of cleaning and hygiene. It comes with it, the measures that have been put in place for our facilities in terms of air quality. And so the policy rationale for sort of getting to a place where it's not always possible to maintain full physical distancing is because people are doing all those other layered measures to maintain safety. So masks is one of those things, and restrictions of access to the building is another. Those are policies that we continue to keep in place. And so maybe I'll just go offline with you to understand more about that when you were traveling, but it's not acceptable to give up, as hard as it may be for folks who are feeling tired, and they've maybe said that 100 times to people to, put your mask on as they walk through the door. That's the posture we've maintained, and that's really critical for us to keep people safe and to keep our operations recovering.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to give more detail. I think everyone on the staff side was cooperating, but I think you're right. There's limited resources, and people just get tired of it. But I feel like, yes, some things aren't practical, but telling people, if you don't want to wear your mask, why don't you get out of this airport, might be an appropriate way to try to keep everyone, including a lot of the people who are working hard there, safe. Because this was not in a physically distanced environment. This wasn't when people are eating. This is when people were in line to clear security.
Right.
And it just was being flaunted. So, and it was on two occasions, not one. So it wasn't just a one-off. With that said, I'm happy to be at the airport again. I'm happy to be traveling. And I do think people are doing an awful lot to try to help.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. That takes us to our technical members. So City of Mississauga, Cheryl Peters. Cheryl, anything from Economic Development in City of Mississauga for us today?
No, in consultation with Harold Drummond, he suggested that there was nothing for an update from our lens.
Okay. Ludwig from Transport Canada.
Hi, Laurie. Hi, team. I chimed in earlier, and sorry if I interrupted your presentation too. Nevertheless, we as a government, as you know, are doing a lot these days and have done a lot pre-election. We're in the writ period right now. So we're in what you call the caretaker convention period, where I can't really say much. What I can say, however, is very anecdotal, and it's not government policy per se. But I do want to commend first the work that the GTA has done in terms of ensuring that in these tough times, it continues to be the premier airport across the country. And that's to the testimony of staff and the workers at the airport. Arisen to the occasion is just not the word. These are difficult times indeed. And certainly the leadership and the initiative shown by the airport authority is second to none. There are several asks I know on the table. I can't speak to them. They're all in process, as was referenced earlier by Daryl. A new government will form, and those asks will be part of that table, whoever that may be. The presentation that you did, Mike and Atul, was just phenomenal. It puts into perspective the kind of impacts that Pearson has had, and they are significant. On the UPS presentation, Aileen, that's fantastic. I mean, it's shown worldwide that cargo is definitely up, but cargo is up because it's high-end, high-value, and low tonnage. So, mining, materials, diamonds, gems, all that stuff is very transportable and has been by air for a long, long time. It's the belly of the aircraft that carried a lot of the cargo across the country, and Pearson certainly handled 50% of Canada's trade that way. That's gone, but hopefully with a lot of the airlines now turning to air freighters, we'll see some of that cargo come back. And hopefully if you take up Saeed's presentation, we'll see some of that happening. Just a small technical thing, Eileen, and that is, I think you greeted the plane on the apron of the UPS, not the runway. So anyway, this
yes, that's quite right. That would have been a bit of a safety hazard, wouldn't it?
Exactly. So just a little LOL. And anyhow, it's important that we pay attention to that sector. On NTCF, I repeated earlier, the criteria will be very clear for all applicants when it does come out, and it's driven by a couple of priorities. I think the draft writers need to pay attention to that in a very clear way. Once we're through the caretaker convention period, GTAA, like others, have the opportunity to speak to our trade policy officials who can provide some sort of a briefing in terms of how to structure and go about looking at your application. I think that's enough said. Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity, Laurie. Take care.
Great, thanks. Always great to have you at the table. Next is, I believe, City of Brampton, Daryl. Daryl with us today. I saw him. No? Sorry, I think the last one I have then would be... Oh, I know. So, Alexander from MTL. Sorry, I'm looking at two screens here. Hi, Alexander.
Oh, hello. Sorry, my team just kind of glitched there. Yeah, I would just like to thank everybody for their presentations. They were super insightful and super helpful. I would like to provide a little bit of an update. So it was actually announced in July that Ontario has been working with the federal government to provide $5.1 million to support small air carriers serving First Nations communities in Northern Ontario. And so this is in addition to more than $11.1 million in federal funding that was provided in 2020 and 2021 to ensure access to essential goods and services during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Great, thanks so much for that. All right, the only things I was going to mention, and it's been raised a couple of times, is what we do on an annual basis is members of our board who are nominated from the five regions do annual updates to those nominating agencies. And so those are coming up and we're getting ready for those with York, Durham, Halton, Peel, and Toronto. Obviously, like all of us, we're waiting to see the outcome of the election on Monday and understand what that means for us as a business and who's our cabinet minister, local MPs, etc. And then, of course, which is just a follow-on from Mike and Atul's presentation, is focused on recovery, both from a passenger perspective, but a revenue perspective as well, and working with governments of all at all levels to support that recovery. So that's it for me. I don't think I've missed anyone. Did I miss any voting or technical members of the committee? I want to make sure, just in terms of teams, I didn't miss anybody.
Dave at Nav Canada. Not much of an update. No problem.
My apologies.
No worries. Happy to see that we're over 50% of the traffic that we used to do. So it has been returning, and we're ready for the rest.
Great, thank you. And then I also want to make sure we have a chance to do Mr. Batty. You've joined our call again. Mr. Batty is a resident from the Durham region, I believe it is. And so I just want to make sure if you had any questions for the GTA or any members of the committee or any comments you wanted to make, that you had a chance to do so.
Laurie, you're cutting in and out, and I will leave it at that. And thank you for asking.
My apologies. I'll turn my camera off, but I did want to make sure you had a chance to ask any questions if you had any. All right. So, Ingrid, when is our next meeting?
Tuesday, December 7th.
All right. So hopefully by then we'll have even more good news to be able to share we'll work together with you all to put together the agenda for the December meeting. So if there are items that anyone would like to have included, please do reach out and let us know. With that, though, I wish you a very good fall, and we'll talk to you all, if not before, in December. Thanks very much. Have a good night, everybody.